Prologue. The High Magus and the Prince of Darkness. Oh, light, Sylvania thinks, panic gripping her heart like a vice. Something feels terribly wrong. Gasping from her position on the ground, the High Magus attempts to sit up as a faint magical tremor courses through her body. Energy, power, fear. In an instant, Elias Keane is beside her, his calloused and blood-splattered hands taking her gently in his arms as she struggles to get up.
"You must rest, High Magus," he says. "You've been badly wounded. We need to have a surgeon look at you right away."
"Nonsense," she replies through gritted teeth. "It would be a waste of time. I'm dying, Ranger. Now help me up." He stares at her uncertainly for a moment, then obeys, strong arms picking her up off the marble floor. She stands, unsteadily at first, her legs shaking from pain and blood loss, but the constant magical energy she channels within her is enough to keep her from collapsing. Her hand presses against her abdomen, which bears a grisly wound from where the king stabbed her. Even with the barest understanding of anatomy, she knows the wound is fatal. The blade went far too deep. Staggering forward, she makes for the window, her steps resolute despite the weakness threatening to overcome her body. On the floor to Sylvania's right, the king lies in an ever-growing pool of blood. His black eyes open in shock as he stares at the ceiling, a terrible slash across his throat. No less than he deserved, she thinks, without the slightest feeling of remorse. You reap what you sow, and you, King Æthelgar, sowed nothing but misery and death. The doors to the entryway burst open, and a handful of haggard-looking nightingales rush inside. From beyond the portal, palace guards shout and curse in alarm, their swords drawn as they give the rebels chase.
"I'm sorry, Protector," one of them says, glancing furtively at Elias as the others lock the doors and form a hasty barricade with the nearby furniture.
"There were too many. We couldn't hold them."
Elias curses and rushes to help the nightingales in their efforts to secure the room.
"Protector?"
Sylvania wonders, as she continues moving toward the window, using the last of her strength to open the curtains and lean heavily against the sill.
"It seems there's more to this ranger than meets the eye."
Before her stretches a beautiful view of Tarsus, the sprawling cityscape hazy in the gray skies of winter. The pillar of radiance rises like a silver spike in the forefront, its top, as always, shooting a beam of light directly into the clouds.
"Everything seems normal," she mumbles to herself in a daze. "But something still feels wrong."
She ponders this for a moment, the pain in her stomach intensifying while blood continues to soak her robes, dripping over her fingers and onto the floor. A grimace is written across her countenance as she stares out at the city. Suddenly, a bright flash emanates from the top of the pillar, followed by a distant rumble like thunder. The brilliance is almost blinding. Just as she's about to shield her eyes from the illumination, an immense boom resounds as the pinnacle erupts, exploding with a force unlike anything she's ever seen before. Blue fire and stone cascade in all directions, the burning wreckage tumbling down on the surrounding buildings. When the smoke clears, the top of the tower containing the Heart of Light is simply gone. She gapes in horror, her stomach twisting as the light winks out. The beam feeding into the arc vanishes in an instant.
"It's finally happened," she whispers weakly, teetering on the verge of collapse.
Elias and the Nightingale warriors all come to stand beside her, staring out the window in shock and awe.
"What in the light was that?"
the ranger asks,
his voice tight with alarm. Just as the words leave his mouth, the dreadful sound of rending stone fills the air. The pillar of radiance buckles, the top sinking as the middle of the enormous tower shatters like broken glass. Even from their vantage point in the palace, they can hear the screams of the horrified citizens from the streets below. The tallest tower in the city, in all of Bihalia, cracks and falls, knocking down the azure tower beside it and sending up a billowing cloud of dust. The resulting tremor seems to shake the very earth as entire neighborhoods are crushed beneath the rubble. The noise seems to last forever until finally the smoke spreads, choking the city with a terrible silence. Trying to take a breath, Sylvania finds that her legs can no longer support the weight of her body. She falls like the pillar of radiance, her eyes rolling back as darkness threatens to overtake her. Elias catches her before she can collapse and lowers her gently to the cold marble floor.
"That," Sylvania rasps, answering his question, "is the sound of our destruction, Ranger. Now the entire kingdom is doomed."
She coughs, warm coppery blood filling her mouth as her insides convulse painfully. The clamor outside the king's chambers has ceased, the guards having forgotten about the intruders, and all around her uncertainty abounds. The nightingales whisper to each other fearfully, their unease apparent on their pale faces. Outside, Sylvania can hear the hysterical cries of the populace as they converge on the broken remains of the conclave.
"Light preserve us," Elias murmurs, his stoic demeanor cracking. "The Ark is destroyed. What are we to do now?"
"The only thing we can do," Sylvania replies, licking her dry lips with a blood-stained tongue.
"We fight."
Weakly, she raises a finger and points to the king's writing desk on the other side of the room.
"Parchment, hurry. I need to write a message."
Still cradling her, Elias nods to one of the nightingales, who jumps to do as she commanded. Within seconds, he's back with a piece of paper, a quill, and a jar of ink. As she struggles to sit up, Sylvania takes the quill and dips it into the ink with a shaky hand, then uses the floor as a desktop to write, Elias holding the parchment still. The words are scrawled but still legible, conveying the dying wishes of her heart.
"To whom it may concern, I, Sylvania Holden, head of the Circle and High Magus of the Conclave of Mages, am now dead. I write to the remaining members of the Conclave at this, the hour of our judgment, to lay forth my last will concerning these events. The day we have long feared has finally arrived. The Ark of Radiance has been destroyed. Now, more than ever, it is imperative that we put our differences aside and unite ourselves to prevent the annihilation of our species. King Aethelgar is dead, and the Pillar of Radiance, the center of magical governance, has fallen. It now falls to the surviving mages, the rangers, the nightingales, and the lords of Tarsus to rally the denizens of Tarsinium and prepare for the invasion that will inevitably come." The bearer of this message is Elias Keen. "He was at my side when I was murdered by the king and has my trust. He will play a vital role as liaison between the nightingales and the rangers and must not be dismissed. Include him and his allies in any vital decisions moving forward. If any members of the Circle survive, I urge you to elect a new High Magus immediately and rally the mages. Your leadership now is more important than it has ever been. Hope still remains. Cling to the light and do all you can to fight the encroaching shadow. With honor, truth, and wisdom, Sylvania."
She scratches her name hastily at the bottom and falls back into Elias's arms, mumbling for the ink to be sanded before the letter is folded. A bout of wet coughing overtakes her, filling her throat with even more blood. When able, she gazes up at the ranger with bleary eyes.
Take that to the conclave. Give it to a member of the circle if any still lives. And aid the mages in any way you can. They'll no doubt need all the help they can get.
Elias nods, his expression hard as stone.
When the R'hllar strike, they'll come for Tarsus. Everyone will flee to the city, to the center of the kingdom. Its defenses must be strengthened. See that this gets done.
Again, he nods quietly.
Good,
she replies, closing her eyes for the barest instant. Sleep suddenly feels like a wonderful refuge from this world of darkness and pain. However, she doesn't allow herself to slumber. She forces her eyelids open, giving him one last meaningful look.
Ranger, you must unite them. The assassination of the king will be difficult for many to accept. Bring the bickering factions together and forge an alliance. This is the only way.
This time he reaches down and squeezes her nerveless hand.
I swear, he replies firmly.
The corner of Sylvania's mouth twitches up into a faint smile.
Good.
Closing her eyes again, she feels sleepiness wash over her like the water of a warm bath.
I wish I could have saved them, she thinks drowsily. Like Sophronia, Kent of old. I wish I could have stood before the Prince of Darkness myself, if only to spit in his eye.
She takes a long, shuddering breath, then lightly drifts away, embracing the warmth that settles over her. The last word that comes to her mind is hope.
The Ark has fallen, my prince, hisses Naz, his quavering voice betraying his unbridled glee. The human zealots have upheld their end of the bargain. Now the way is clear.
Asmodeus, lord of the 11th circle of hell and prince of darkness, smiles at the welcome news. His eyes snap open as he regards his most trusted servant, an armored gorgon kneeling before him, his horned head bowed in reverence. Like the other gorgons in the prince's army, he's armed and ready to do battle at a moment's notice, his bloodlust so close to the surface that it's almost oozing out of him.
I know, Asmodeus replies, pushing himself up from his obsidian throne and descending the steps. I have felt it.
Like a boil being lanced, the magical dome shielding the last kingdom of man has burst. Its energies have at long last been released back into the universe.
Now, after 1,000 years, final judgment can be carried out on this tiny, insignificant planet, bringing a long overdue end to this war, the Prince of Darkness thinks, and my place among my brethren will finally be secured.
As he reaches the bottom of the steps, Naz glances up at him, his glowing eyes eager to begin the work of death.
Shall I muster the legions, my prince?
Yes, Asmodeus replies. But first, there is something that I must do. Bring forth one of the maidens, one whose mind has not yet been broken. It is time for the light to be blotted from this world once and for all.
A look of understanding passes over Naz's face, and he leaps to his feet, a wicked grin spreading across his features.
As you command.
He races out of the command tent, leaving the Prince of Darkness alone with his thoughts.
These years have been long, he muses, staring into the flickering green flames of the brazier smoldering in the center of his tent. So long that I doubt many of the humans even remember my name. Well, they will remember soon enough. They will remember, they will fear, and eventually they will die. My elder brothers, the other princes of darkness, have long abandoned Vihalia, moving on to other worlds to conquer and consume. They considered this conquest a failure, having assumed that the humans' magical barrier was too strong to be broken. Now I, their youngest brother Asmodeus, will finally bring the rebellious race of men to heel.
It's a victory so sweet he can almost taste it. Before long, Naz returns, bowing respectfully before the Prince of Darkness.
We've retrieved the maiden, my prince. She is awaiting your pleasure outside.
Good, Asmodeus replies. Now, gather my generals. I want them to behold for themselves what comes next.
Naz departs wordlessly, once more carrying out his master's will. Feeling the lust for battle course through his veins, Asmodeus casts his eyes back to where his sword leans against the side of his throne. It's an impressive weapon, the midnight blade as long as he is tall, with jagged serrations near the hilt, and a fist-sized emerald set into its pommel.
Wailing Death,
a name for which it is well suited, was forged in hellfire and tempered with the blood of 100 slaves. Many of the R'hllar's enemies and even some of its allies have felt the keenness of its sting. He picks up the formidable weapon, feeling its familiar weight in his grip.
Soon you'll taste the blood of men,
he coos, running a thumb along the edge of the blade.
It's been far too long since last you feasted.
Wailing Death in hand, Asmodeus makes his way to the tent flap and steps out into the boiling rays of the sun. Their magic has scarred this world, turning it into an eternal desert. As the brightness assaults his eyes, he doesn't let his discomfort show. In life, there is only strength. It's the only attribute that matters to the R'hllar. A slave girl quivers on the ground before him, her hands bound behind her back and a gag shoved into her mouth. She's flanked on either side by gorgons, and as the prince approaches, she shrinks away in terror, tears filling her red-rimmed eyes. Coldly, he stares down at her, noting with satisfaction the way she averts her eyes from his gaze.
Humans are so weak, he thinks. They don't deserve to inherit this world. They deserve only to be dominated.
He waits quietly until his generals arrive, their armor clinking and their expressions blazing with desire. They kneel as soon as they enter his presence, a variety of demonic cousins lowering their heads in a sign of respect. Asmodeus nods in turn, stabbing the point of his sword into the parched earth and resting all four of his hands on its pommel.
Children,
he declares, lifting his voice so that all in the area may hear,
the day of retribution has finally come. The Ark of Radiance has fallen, making the way clear for our mighty horde, and even now the humans quail at our coming. The hour of the R'hllar is here.
The generals howl in delight and beat their fists and claws against their breastplates, which only causes the girl to cower even more. In the periphery, droves of warriors come forth from the camp, drawn by the commotion and the sound of their master's speech.
These wretches,
Asmodeus continues, gesturing at the slave,
cling to their light and their feeble magic, hiding like worms beneath a stone from the predators above. It is time that we take what is ours by right of strength. It is time, my children, that we take their precious light away from them.
Reaching forward, he places one of his palms on the young woman's forehead, his fingers extending into her tangled black hair. She resists his touch at first, vainly trying to pull away as he takes her, but his movements prove too swift, his grasp too strong for her to escape. As their flesh touches, Asmodeus can feel the essence of her soul, the life force pulsing throughout her frail human body. It's the power that inhabits all living things, an energy the R'hllar learned to harvest long ago. For a moment, he savors it, enjoying the vibrant throb of her beating heart. Then, he begins to reap. The life force is sucked out of her like water absorbed by the thirsty desert air. It transfers from her body to his, running through his hand and into his bloodstream, filling him with strength beyond that of his natural state. She lets out a strangled gasp as the energy leaves her, her flesh growing cold and her eyes rolling back into her skull. Soon she begins to wither and die, the color leaving her skin, fading to the dull gray of ash. When it's done, he releases her head, letting the now shriveled husk of her body fall limply to the dirt. Remorse, pity, guilt, these are the emotions of the weak. Asmodeus feels nothing for the nameless woman's death. Instead, he focuses on the nexus of power now oscillating within him. Tendrils of green lightning flicker at his fingertips, causing his sharp nails to glow with an emerald light. Without preamble, he thrusts his hand into the air and utters ancient words of power, a spell learned from the very first of the R'hllar eons ago.
Dazral Jok, Dazral Yev, Dazral Kar!
A beam of fire shoots upward, erupting from his hand like the Dunathar volcanoes of his homeworld. The spell draws the attention of all the demons in the camp, who stare transfixed at the clear blue expanse of the wasteland sky. The flames suddenly burst alight when they reach their zenith, flaring outward in a brilliant display of pyrotechnics. For a moment, the war camp is bathed in green light. Then, as the shimmering sparks fall, the light evaporates, disappearing as quickly as it had arrived. His senses, still heightened by the slave woman's life essence, perceive a growing energy in the sky, a feeling of power being gathered by the atmosphere itself. Black clouds form out of nothingness where his fire had exploded, billowing like thunderheads and covering the land. Soon even the sun's light is blotted out, shrouding the wastes in a thick layer of shadow. Asmodeus rips Wailing Death from the dirt, raising the blade into the air and roaring,
"To arms, my R'hllar! Today we march to war!"
The army lets out a deafening cry and raises their weapons along with their leader. They immediately begin forming ranks in the desert, preparing the siege engines and bridling the beasts without bothering to break down their camp. War drums, loud and insistent, ring out, accompanied by the shrieks of 100 different monsters from 100 different worlds. Asmodeus watches the proceedings with an imperious eye, his blood pulsing loudly in anticipation with the rhythm of battle. When they finally begin their long march to Tarsinium, the clouds seem to follow them, heralding the return of the R'hllar to the world of men.